This talk tonight is going to be geared towards the aspiring product managers and the new product managers, kind of like myself, but I hope everyone's going to get something out of it tonight. This is getting the most out of your product team. A little bit about me before we get started. So I'm a mobile product manager at Barnes & Noble. My main product is the mobile website, so bn.com on your smartphone, heavily trafficked e-commerce website. I also work a little bit on the native iOS and Android apps. So Barnes & Noble in the App Store, the retail app, I also work on that. Before that, I was at W.W. Norton. So that's a book publisher. I was launching EdTech tools, so online homework and adaptive quizzing, primarily for college students and teachers. Those are the products I worked on before Barnes & Noble. I'm from beautiful Charleston, South Carolina. Has anyone been to Charleston? Bunch of New Yorkers in the room or Northeasterners. If you ever get a chance to go, you should. This is Broad Street in downtown Charleston. It's a beautiful place. And last but not least, that's my beautiful one-year-old daughter named Camille. Right before a diaper change, poopy diaper, as babies often do. I'm a product school alum. So I took the course in 2016. I'm not here to hard sell you on enrolling in the course. That's someone else's job. But just a few benefits I got out of the course. You're going to learn the basics. So if you don't know the basics of product management, you're going to learn it in this course. You're going to be able to relate your current experience. So if you're in marketing, if you're a developer, you're going to have to convince a hiring manager that what I'm doing is relevant to product management, and you're going to be good at that. The product school is going to teach you how to relate your experience to a product management role. And then you're going to learn interview 101. So during my interviews at Barnes & Noble, I feel like I nailed a few questions. I only nailed them because I knew they were coming. I knew they were coming because we covered them at the product school. So again, not to hard sell you, but you are going to get something out of the course if you enroll. Does anybody have any questions about the product school right now from someone who took the course? Sure.
For benefit three, do you think training to get a job, to get a job, and doing the job sets you up for different things?
Say it one more time.
Say it differently. Do you think training to get a job and doing the job, do you feel like they were congruous, or do you feel like they kind of were different when it came?
So the question is, learning to do the job and learning to get the job, are they two different things? Are they related? Is there overlap? I certainly think there's overlap, because in your interview, you're going to be asked about product management tasks and skills. You're going to have to be able to relate generally that I know what a product manager does on a day-to-day basis. So I think the entire course prepares you for that, but you're also just going to get a cheat sheet on what they're going to ask you in interviews. And I think you can look that up online, but you can also take the product school to help. Good question. Any other questions? All right, one more thing about my background that I think is important. I'm an English major, fits with Barnes & Noble. Here are some of my favorite books. So East of Eden by Steinbeck, Anti-Fragile by Taleb, Michael Lewis's The Big Short. I'm going to give a bunch of book recommendations tonight for product managers. One of the cool things about Barnes & Noble is that there are a bunch of random-ass books lying around the office for free. So let's get on to the talk. So as an English major, I'm a generalist. I don't have any formal training in design or development, but I think all product managers, in a way, are generalists. Once you become a product manager, you're a generalist on a team of experts. So your experts are your designers, your developers, your QA leads. It's your role to put them in the best position to do their work. That means you're going to rely on their work. You're going to chime in on their design, chime in on their technical solutions. But it's not your role really to define those ultimate design or solutions. So your team, of course, is your most important resource. It's their expertise that's going to drive a successful product. So in this talk, we're going to cover four areas of product management that I've struggled with as relatively new product manager. And these areas are really interacting with your team. So we're going to share resources and strategies for these four areas of product management. I think communication is a big theme you're going to hear in this presentation tonight. Building trust, as well as just general soft skills. That's so important in product management. You don't get that in every single talk. We're going to cover that tonight. Any questions before we get started? as I sip my water. One caveat, so all teams are different. So Barnes & Noble product management is way different than Google or a startup. But I'm trying to keep the talk general enough that I think you're going to get something out of it no matter where you are or where you end up. So first, strategy, product strategy. Really at the very beginning of product management, it's one of the essences of what you're doing. For the relatively new product managers in the room, who sets the strategy for your product team? Does anyone want to share? I know there's a few relatively new product managers. Who sets a strategy for your product?
Together, the roadmap for the year?
Yeah, roadmap for the year, what your product is intended to do, where you ultimately see it going. Who defines that?
Yeah, so the CFO defines like the five KPIs we're going to work on for the year, and then all the directors get together and we're like, here are the projects we want to work on to do those KPIs.
So it's kind of a collaborative thing, but it's kind of above. It's a C-level executive who's also defining some things as well. Yeah. I think the point I want to make here, if you're a relatively new product manager and his story, I think back this up, it's probably going to be your boss or someone above you who is ultimately guiding the product strategy. It's not going to be Michael Scott, but it's going to be your equivalent. So it's really important to align with your boss and harness that person's expertise on strategy to begin with. Has anyone disagreed with their boss on strategy? I see some nods. Has anyone made that a vocal disagreement in front of your entire product organization? You have. How did that go?
It was fine. I mean, it depends on if you're given the charge to run your product, and you're not given the charge to run your product, then you're going to have to have it laid out well.
Yeah. So for you, it actually ended up okay.
Yeah, in a bigger setting.
Yeah.
In a smaller company, much more challenging.
I disagree, actually. I work for a small startup.
Yeah.
I find it easier to want to hear from everyone, and I disagree a few times. You know.
Sure. The story I want to relate, I was at WW Norton at the time, and I disagreed with my boss on the roadmap or strategy. He wanted to develop internal-facing tools so our authors could build online homework content into the system. I wanted to prioritize external-facing tools that we could sell to our customers, and we had a really hard launch date, so it was this decision point. It wasn't that I disagreed with him that was the problem. It's that I decided to do it in front of our designers, developers, our project managers. Basically, the entire project, our product organization was there. And I told him five different ways how he was wrong. And it didn't go very well, as you can imagine. The point I want to make is it's important to align with your boss on strategy before you're vocal with the rest of your teammates. Otherwise, you're not going to get what you want, and you might have some relationship repairing to do, as I did. So a couple resources and strategies for talking about strategy. So I don't think I'm going to pronounce this word right. It's Japanese. Sang was here. He was telling me how to pronounce it. Has anyone seen this term? I think in Japanese, it literally means going around the roots or laying the foundation to get what you want. Essentially, what it means today is having the meeting before the meeting. It's aligning with your boss on strategy. It's picking their brains on what they see as the product vision before you then vocalize that to your team. The folding burrito prioritization article. So this was sent to me by my product mentor. 20 different ways to prioritize your roadmap. From highly quantitative to highly qualitative. So you're going to get some tips out of this. I think it's just a blog post for thinking about the roadmap and how you're ordering the things on your roadmap. And finally, my first book recommendation for tonight, Good Strategy, Bad Strategy by Richard Rumut. I can't say enough about this. So three things Richard Rumelt says about strategy. So it's a point of view. It's one level abstracted from your roadmap. It's what you believe about your customers or the market you're in and the opportunities that you believe you'll be able to take advantage of. Again, it's one level above the roadmap that ultimately defines what gets put on the roadmap itself. It's saying no to many things. I think bad strategy, as this author relates, has its roots in not making tough choices. So it's knowing which opportunities you're going to let go of. And then finally, it's not a set of goals or a mission statement. So at Barnes & Noble, we want to become pillars in our communities, be the best omnichannel booksellers in America. It's a great mission statement, a little fluffy. It's not a strategy. It's not an action plan for moving forward in the world. So once you've aligned on strategy, communicating problems to be solved to your team. This is the way you communicate the customer need to your designers and developers. Hopefully they're doing the research hand in hand with you. That's not always the case, though, especially in larger organizations. So you're going to have to ultimately communicate to your team effectively. And I find this actually quite hard for two reasons. At Barnes & Noble, I'm often the intermediary getting requests from across the organization. So stakeholders like the CEO, the CDO, marketers, merchants, they're all coming with product requests. So I'm not directly touching the customer in certain requests. I'm getting that from them. And stakeholders are often defaulting to solutions. They love to tell you how to fix a problem. They don't always excel at telling you about the problem themselves. And I'm seeing some nodding in the room. People understand what I'm talking about. So getting to the root of the problem is hard, but you have to do that if you're going to communicate effectively with your team. So I wanted to tell a story from my experience when you don't effectively communicate the customer need that a product's intended to solve and how it leads to a product identity crisis sometimes. So at Barnes & Noble, I inherited basically a microsite. It was a responsive website focused on summer reading. I started playing around with a product. I had heard from the team that it was a rocky launch. The product got shelved pretty quickly. And I could kind of see why. So I did a product postmortem, and I heard some pretty interesting things from our team. So one of the key stakeholders said, well, we developed this product to promote our own curated book list. So at Barnes & Noble, we make a bunch of summer reading lists that we put on our website, we promote. Makes sense. Talk to our team, they said something a little different. So this site, as far as our designers understood, was created so that our customers could create their own book list with summer reading. So those two are, to me, are related, but they beg of somewhat different solutions. So when you think about the stakeholders' need, it's list first. This site is going to be all about the summer reading lists we've curated. You're going to think about the organization or taxonomy of those lists. You're going to think about influencers or whether you can get famous authors to create lists for you. The designer, on the other hand, is thinking about a product-first organization. They're thinking about search and allowing customers to search like the 15 million books we have on our website. It's wish listing, and can you put a flavor to that wish listing? There was never alignment on this problem or the customer need, and it led to a product that really didn't do either well. So that's just to reinforce how important it is to communicate the customer need to your team. A few resources and strategies that I've found helpful as a relatively new product manager for this. So the five whys, many of you are probably familiar with that. Asking at least five whys if needed to get to the essence of a problem. And you're going to find you're going to need this with stakeholders. You're going to need all five whys to get there. Asking how questions. So once you've asked why to identify the problem, then you ask how questions to begin ideating on solutions. That's why, how laddering. I really like Intercom's intermission project brief. So you should be creating an artifact that your team can refer to time and time again, outlining what you're trying to do. Intercom has a great one-page format for this. So don't invent your own project brief. Use Intercom's. And I really like keeping that artifact, no matter which format you use, separate from the tech specs, from the user stories. At Barnes & Noble, you can end up with 45-page business requirement documents. No one reads them. So make sure the problem to be solved is extracted and clear for your team that they can go back to time and time again. So I want to give away not time yet. I jumped the gun. So we just talked about communication to the team, but just as important is getting the team to open up to you. They're your experts. They're not always, let's say, as willing to share their opinions as you are. So how do you get communication flowing back to you? And I think that's undervalued. A common product manager interview question that I've seen is, how do you convince your engineers or your designers on the value of building a new feature? That's something I've seen in interviews. I think just as important from my experience is, how do you make sure your teammates share their opinions in your stand-ups? At Barnes & Noble, I work with a development team that's offshore. There's a language barrier, so English is their second language. They're not as comfortable always sharing their opinions on the phone as I need them to be. But that's your goal and your role as a product manager, to get your developers and designers to share their expertise. A few strategies that I've found helpful. So it seems basic, but the simple question, what do you think, and asking it continually of your team members, I've found very effective. I've had a developer suggest a technical solution and then immediately go to his colleague and ask, well, what do you think about that? And you get a very different response that begins a debate or dialogue. And that's the kind of thing you want to happen in your stand-up. Responding to questions with positive reinforcement. Again, basic communication, but encouraging your team members to ask questions by thanking them for doing that. Hey, that's a great question. Keep them coming. Especially when you're working with vendors like I do, it's important to make sure they're engaged. Make sure your architects are in your technical meetings. So junior designers, developers, even product managers maybe are a little uncomfortable sharing their opinions in a team setting. So when you have important product decisions, you want your more experienced architects in the room to weigh in. And my second book recommendation, Humble Inquiry by Ed Sheen. Has anyone read this? So I was recommended this book in A Lean Coffee, which is another great meetup in New York that you should check out. I think it's like Lean Coffee or Kanban is the title. It's all about project management and some of the soft skills that go with that. This is a great book for thinking about leading by asking questions instead of telling. So check this out if you're interested in this topic in particular. Okay, second book. Who wants to take it up? You pass it back. So what's your name?
I am Dan Rogers, and
what subject or kind of area do you edit?
I work at Austin
University. Oh, cool. Got it.
I work in the online division, so I kind of manage a website now.
God, that's probably similar to me, where I was doing product management in a similar role, and it's how you relate that experience to get a PM position. Yeah.
The same time, rules and pushers.
So this is a book I've actually read. If you like thrillers, or if you like No Country for Old Men, I recommend checking that out. All right, I want to end tonight by talking about managing yourself. We talked about your team, but getting the most out of your team is just getting the most out of yourself as well. This picture is pretty fitting. This guy has way too much to do. He has six arms. We only have two. How do you juggle all of the responsibilities you have as a product manager on a day-to-day basis? It's freaking crazy in some contexts. I think it's an age-old struggle to balance the internal versus the external. So today I had 6 30-minute meetings. I answered 15 Jira tickets. How much time does that leave me for customer research or competitive analysis? are really product strategy. How do you set aside time to focus on the external, which is really product? That's what you're supposed to be doing. It's delivery versus impact. It really comes down to this question: which PM are you? Are you a project manager? Are you a product manager? Where are you spending your time? And I don't think it's an either or. I'm not devaluing project management by any means. And as a product manager, you're going to have project management responsibilities. But again, you have to make time for what product managers are intended to do, if that makes sense. My most successful launch was at WW Norton. It was an adaptive quizzing tool. I was not the lead product person on it, but the lead product person just did phenomenal work. He knew our customers, what they were expecting, and not only what they were expecting, but how to delight them. He had done his homework, and then he kept us ruthlessly focused on those goals. So a successful product launch is going to require great product work, so make time for it. A few resources. So the SVPG blog, Silicon Valley Product Group, Marty Kagan writes on this. I think he's one of the Zen masters of product management. I think it's a great kick in the ass. There are a bunch of blog posts about product managers in the wild who have really devoted time to product work. Personal Kanban by Jim Benson. So this is taking Kanban, lean production from Toyota in Japan, applying that to your own personal life and work, managing your work in progress and visualizing your work, kind of two key elements of Kanban. And then The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker, a management theory legend or expert, gives you kind of four tips for being an effective knowledge worker, and one of those is how to manage your own time. I think important skills that I was never really taught in school, but it's going to be super important to your product management success. Takeaway, my last slide, I promise I'm wrapping up. This has been about helping your experts do their best work, aligning with your boss, communicating to your developers and designers, managing yourself. Communication is key. I don't have to tell you that. You know that, but I hope I've given you a few of takeaways from my experience. And then managing your own time, visualizing your own work, and really thinking about every day, where am I spending my time? Is it the internal or the external? I hope you've gotten something out of the presentation tonight, and hopefully you can apply it to your current role or future role in product. So thank you.
Questions?
It's time for questions now? Okay. Side hand.
So, on communication, can you elaborate on if in normal communications, on day-to-day
experience, say that again?
How do you communicate with stakeholders in just PowerPoint decks or, you know, for meetings? Can you shed some light into how?
Sure. That's true. Well, one, when you have something important to communicate with your team or other people in the organization, how short can you keep it, I think, is an important thing to think about. That's why I recommended the Intercom intermission project brief, which they use in their own organization. It's like stripped down. They use the jobs to be done methodology. It's like one job story, a few success metrics, what's in scope. It's one page long. But yeah, if you're writing a 30-page BRD, I'm not going to read it, nor can I expect anyone to read it. I guess verbal communication, I'm just thinking of a meeting I had 4:30 today, and I hate when people schedule meetings at 4:30. But we were talking with a stakeholder about a Pandora promotion, like a tie-in to Barnes & Noble. And it was really just getting the person to define the opportunity itself. They came in with assumptions as if our designers already knew exactly what they were trying to do. And it was my job to get them to back up and define the problem so the designers in the room actually understood what we were trying to do. And they heard it from the stakeholder themselves. Like, I don't want to be the translator. I want the stakeholder to find that problem in front of my team, hopefully. So getting everyone in the room with the stakeholder, I guess, is another strategy that comes to mind.
Yeah, I'm curious, going back to communicating with stakeholders, uh-huh. Like it must be, very not ideal if a stakeholder comes to you with a feature request rather
yeah.
than communicating the data. I guess, do you have any tips for getting stakeholders to bring you data that then you can interpret yourself in terms of, identifying what metrics should be targeted rather than having them be so specific in there?
Yeah. At Barnes & Noble, the stakeholder has to enter a bunch of data into a, let's say, a Smartsheet request form that outlines the problem. Sometimes they just tell you the solution in that field, to be honest with you. But then they're supposed to estimate customer impact. So they're supposed to bring data from their product line, their estimated revenue potential if we implement this feature. I'm a little skeptical when I see those numbers, because every stakeholder calculates their own benefit ROI differently. So how do I compare two projects when those estimates are coming from different people? So once you get those requests, I think you have to go do some digging on your own. Look at your web analytics, look at your revenue, and try to estimate for yourself. Well, what do you think this impact is going to be? Who said trust but verify? Is that like a, Reagan said that? Maybe you should pull a Ronald Reagan there. I don't know. Good question.
How consistent is your velocity working with an offshore development team? And are there issues with, where is your development team?
India, in southern India. Yeah.
So if a developer has a question on a certain issue that they're working on, are you getting notified and applying immediately, or do you keep it within working hours?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the question is, how do you maintain your cadence or a good flow if you're working with an offshore team where you're overlapping very little, perhaps, during the working day? Is that kind of the question?
Yeah, and then I don't have offshore developers,
yeah.
But I worked in a company before where we had offshore development and turnover rates were really high. I don't know if people have a similar experience.
Yeah. Couple different ways to answer that. So we have 2 hours of time that we overlap, and those 2 hours in the morning are jam-packed with meeting with the offshore developers. That's one way we try to keep our cadence going. I can send an email, but it needs to be clarified in a meeting where questions can be asked. So the first thing I do every morning at 9:15 is hop on a call with the offshore development team to try to maintain that cadence. In terms of turnover, I think my struggle with an offshore vendor is that sometimes it's a little bit of a black box. It feels like I'm passing requirements to them, and then out comes something that I hope is what I intended it to be, but it isn't always. I would much rather work with a co-located development team as part of the same organization. That's just not what I'm dealing with at Barnes & Noble, to be honest. So I think I'm learning to deal with those problems, but I'm still having some of them as well. Yeah.
I was just curious because the other company that I was working at, they were doing waterfall. So it's different doing waterfall with offshore versus doing agile with offshore. So I was just curious.
At Barnes & Noble, we definitely trend towards waterfall in that situation. Yeah, just to be completely honest. Yeah. Good question, though. So I'll try to define that, and then I want people to chime in and give their own definition. Waterfall is assuming you know exactly how a product should be built and what your customers are going to need up front. So it's specking out every detail, basically down to the last sentence, and then initiating a project that's going to take 6 months or 3 months or 9 months and end in one big bang release where you're not releasing product or code iteratively. I guess these different techniques, waterfall and agile, they're all just means to an end. And sometimes organizations are set up as waterfall for a reason, but the best practice right now in software development has clearly been established to be a more agile and iterative process.